This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Well, welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And here's where we talk about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to talk about adulthood. What's a true adulthood? How do you get there? What happens if you are physically an adult but emotionally and mentally aren't? And the guest is Randy Russell. Now, Randy has been professionally mentoring young people and their families into soulful adulthood for over 40 years, and he's been instrumental in designing and directing 4 successful programs for launching young adults. Well, good morning, or good afternoon, Randy. Glad to have you here.
Thanks, Lon. Glad to be here.
Okay, and just one reminder to the listeners that are listening live, we have a chat room. It's in the lower right-hand side of the screen on k4hd.com. And if you have some questions or comments, we'll be glad to try to answer them as we go. Now, Randy, let's start off with adulthood. What do we want adults to be? What's the goal? You have a kid, an adolescent. What do we hope they'll be in about 20 years?
Well, we hope they're going to be very very healthy for themselves and their family and for our planet. So to be able to be fully able to take care of yourself and to be an asset to everything around you.
Okay, well, they're going to be responsible. They have certain rights, but they have responsibilities and a number of other things. Somebody that's, as you say, can be productive and part of the solution rather than part of the problem. Is that a fair summary?
That's a fair summary.
Okay. Well, what are you if you're not a real adult? Say you're 40 years old but not a real adult. What are you?
I would say that you're probably either late adolescent or late child. When you look at developmental phases, you know, there's certain kind of checkoffs that you've made it into the next developmental phase. And so you can look on the social scene or the cultural scene or the government scene, and you start to say, okay, how old are they really? How old are they acting? So emotionally or socially, we have these concepts of what an adult should be like and what an adolescent's like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see some of those. You know, somebody might be 40 or 50 years old or just a kid, still acting like a kid. And I presume you've seen a number of people like that too.
Yeah, and you know, one of the big things about this is that if we're not really, if we're not invested in our future and in a healthy culture, then we're still in adolescence because we're more egotistical.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. You look at it. Just look around, and they never grew up. So, is it possible to accidentally be a real adult, or does it take some conscious action?
You know, it's rare that humans just accidentally get into adulthood. Now, you know, we're somewhat egotistical in those younger phases, and if we don't get past the milestones that make us an adult, then, you know, things kind of fall apart. So, in what I've seen and what I've experienced in my own life is that we really need mentors in order to be able to make this transition. Mentors that know what it means to be an adult because they live that way, and they're able to mentor young people, both males and females, into appropriate roles for being mature humans.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of chat questions here on that. Who makes the decision what is really an adult? And who makes the rules on who is grown enough to be an adult? That sort of comes from a perspective as if there's some governmental authority that puts a stamp in your forehead that you're an adult. It doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it doesn't. Well, for one thing, there's not two humans on the planet that are exactly alike. And so, you know, you've got a range here of, we kind of know what it means to be physically adult, you know, full stature, that you know, you've grown up. Maybe as a male, you've got a beard, or you're able to grow one. And as far as neurologically, we know now that humans, their brain continues to move to a full development stage, and males get there in their late 20s and females get there in their younger 20s. So those are two that we're pretty, you know, we can make some assessments about, you know, whether they've arrived or not.
I would say on that, to a large extent, it's other people, how people react to you. I know in my case, when I see some, you know, boys with toys, overgrown adolescent, or an older adolescent, I say, oh, good, they're not responsible. I don't necessarily want to be around them very much. So I think other people make the decision and how they react. This goes to a question they ask, but what if you don't fit into society? Well, it seems to me like maybe that's part of the definition of not being an adult.
Well, it could be. You know, one of the things that I look at on this is you know, to be a full adult is that you know that your actions have consequences, and that you're acting in such a way that you're mindful of those consequences for those around you and for your overall environment. You know, that you are your ability to respond, or you're responsible. Now, that's not to be confused with, you know, defining adulthood in this culture is kind of interesting anyway, because if you're asking young people now, they don't want to be a mature adult because they've equated it with having a mortgage and losing sight of any vision or hope, and, you know, working, you know, 60 hours a week in order to be able to buy labor-saving devices, that you've lost life. And if you're looking at that as defining whether someone's an adult or not, then it feels like kind of a hopeless, you know, to be a true adult would be to have that ability to be inspired and to stay alive rather than moving into, like, depression and feeling trapped.
Mm-hmm. Well, they make an observation here, just going by size and looks is not fair, and that's what you're saying. It's not accurate either. Size and look, somebody can be definitely not an adult, but still look like it. But it's an interesting question. Why should you have to be a part of society?
Well, you don't need to be. You don't have to be a part of society.
Sort of tough not to do, though, unless you're going to be a hermit.
Well, that's true. And then, you know, from my traditions, like, society is bigger than just people. So, you know, there are some people who their expertise and their joy and their bliss is to be out in nature and be in the society of wild things. And that doesn't mean they're not an adult. It just means that their particular interest or their particular adulthood isn't focused on being like everybody else around them.
Mm-hmm. So there is an option, so it's not necessarily have to be in society. But most of us choose that for a variety of reasons. Here's another interesting question on the chat board. Can you be a functioning adult yet still not be mature? Or is that a contradiction in terms?
That depends how you define functioning adult. You know, there's lots of people that are functioning, but emotionally they're depressed. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that a fully fledged adult can't get depressed. But somehow I'm thinking that adulthood's not working for you if you're depressed.
Yeah, well, there's oftentimes a reason for a depression. And if it's not working, that can tend to make you depressed. I would say my reactions, you can function in the basic functions, have a job, maybe you're not inspired by it, have a family, but you're not inspired by it, or you just sort of doing routine things. So you can be a functioning adult in that way, but the life is very, very bleak or grim or dark in somebody that's in that situation, just getting by and doing the basics. Does that make sense?
Lon, if I take this to a kind of a big picture look at this whole thing, mm-hmm. with mature adulthood and why we need to consider that or be that, is that lots of us are so disconnected from our planet, from nature and our environment, that if we act out in those adolescent ways, the human family can actually go extinct, or really destroy the environment for the rest. So when you look at a big picture, like when you think of an eagle, when is an eagle, you know, mature, an adult? It's when they can take care of themselves, but they also play a vital role in the overall environment. So when I'm talking about a true adult, I'm going for a little bigger picture than they know how to pay their bills, that they're a contributing member to the harmony of this whole planet. And that when they make decisions, they're mindfully making those decisions so that the 7 generations to come in the human family and, you know, the plants and animals and everything else are benefited by them being a mature adult on this planet.
Okay, so you're put a lot of that in not only how they relate to other people, but how they relate to the environment, that they're responsible, they're not exploiting, but living in harmony with nature. Am I on the right track, what you're saying?
Absolutely, that they're here. I mean, you know, to use the metaphor of there's really not any parts of your body other than maybe a cancer that, you know, something that's gone wrong. All the parts of your body are essential to you being a healthy human. And when something's gone, you know, then the other parts either have to work harder or they don't work at all. Well, a lot of us forget about that we live on a planet that has the same dynamics as a human body, and that everything here is really here and serves a purpose, and that includes us. And so a part of becoming a full, mature human being is to realize the role that you play. And my belief is that when you understand the role that you play and the unique gifts that you bring to it, that there's a level of peacefulness and inspiration that happens within you, because we naturally fulfill important roles. And when we play the role that fits us, then our lives are richer by just being who we are.
I think part of what you're saying, to use it in a little bit different words, is adulthood is being in harmony with your environment. And that includes not only society and other people, but the environment, the nature at large. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, but being in harmony, but also being able to be yourself, not having to be something that you're not, you know, is part of that, what I would call soulful adulthood, you know, where where you're really fulfilling your role. You're loving doing it because it fits you so well, and it benefits your family, it benefits your culture, and it benefits your planet.
So somebody that's in a job that they hate and they don't feel inspired by, but they're just doing it just to get the bills, is missing out on something, and they're missing out on at least one of the elements of what would be true adulthood.
That's what I would. That's how I would sum that up. Yes.
Okay. Well, you talked about let's talk a little bit more about goals, but you use the term soulful adulthood and true adulthood. What do you mean by that? By those two terms?
Okay. Well, if I were to quickly define true adulthood, you know, it's meaning that you've reached the level of competence physically, neurologically, emotionally, environmentally, socially, and morally. And with the morally, it's that they realize that their thoughts, actions, and emotions produce results and consequences, and their intentions are for long-term positive health for themselves and their environment. Now, so, you know, we've kind of touched on the true adulthood in our conversation here. What I would add to soulful adults is they have this deep self-knowledge that they've worked for or been mentored into, a defined vision or purpose that matches their soul identity or their unique giftedness, and a life of service that inspires them and inspires others. So
okay.
That's the soulful piece for me.
So there's a spiritual aspect to that, and that sounds a very similar to what L.G. Mitchell was talking about when he was on a couple, 3 weeks ago, and his relationship with people and others. Sounds like there's some overlap here between what L.J. is saying and my previous guest, and what you're saying is about the soulful adulthood is more, it's a spiritual element, I'm sure.
Right. Well, and it's definitely, you know, in some ways it's kind of a human physics in a way. So, because each one of us is uniquely designed in a different way. We all have different fingerprints, thumbprints, and we all have different, what I'd call soul prints. And so, part of this whole thing of life, for some of us, is being in harmony with ourselves and our environment, so that we are living our bliss, and we can do that in just about, you know, just about any environment, because you're living out a vision, and the vision came from you being able to learn about yourself enough to make decisions that feel and result in a very positive lifestyle.
Okay, well, I think we've got a fair grasp on the gold of what's a true adulthood. And the topic, of course, is transitioning to adulthood. So what role do parents, family, community, peers, all of this, what do they play in to make this transition?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest pieces in this transition, because we talked about that it's rare that humans are going to accidentally transition into really the mature adulthood, you know. So one of the first things that I would, you know, that I consider is the support system, the mentors, the elders, the uncles, the aunties that are part of you growing up. One of the problems we have today is that there's a lot of families that don't have any mentors or uncles, aunties that are taking responsibility and then learning the skills in childhood and adolescence, especially adolescence, so they can even do the transition.
Okay, so the mentors is an important part of it, and oftentimes it happens to the family, but all too often it's not within the family for whatever reason, right?
Right. And you're going to the downside to this need for humans to mentor and to transition, you're going to see in how gangs interact, or terror groups, or even fraternities, or, you know, that there's they're looking for someone to show them something. And actually, on the what Joseph Campbell calls the hero's journey, is that once you accept this journey into discovering yourself, that a mentor shows up, that an older person that can guide you to find you, not to replicate them, but to find you, shows up on your path. So that's the first one, is having a support system that works like
okay. So a support system, generally with families, yeah, with peers and stuff, okay.
So just a hint for our listeners, especially if they're younger or they have impact on younger couples, I really think we need to rethink godparents, so that when you choose godparents, you're choosing mature people that you have a lot of faith in, that not so much raising your kid if you die, you know, when they're kids, but that can step in when they become adolescents, because the parent's role is changing from management to consultant. That they're holding a space for the child, you know, so that they've got boundaries. But the ones that can do the most impact of teaching those necessary pieces that have to do with being a good human being and facing your fears actually happens to be the uncles and aunties, whether they're related to you or not. So my suggestion is, you know, choose godparents and be upfront with them that they're going to be helping you train your child when they become teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's sort of trying to set up, the godparents is generally involved in baptism, and they're setting them up to be some mentors, outside of the family mentors.
So in order to transition, there's some training that needs to be done. Otherwise, the transition's not going to happen. And these are some pretty practical things, too. Things like problem solving. You know, using challenging activities with physical demands. Because it's really important for both males and females that they learn problem solving that includes gross motor skills. There's Dr. Sachs, and I don't know if you interviewed him yet or not, but he was one of the ones that pointed out some research about that the part of your brain that has to do with motivation and inspiration doesn't develop like it needs to become a mature adult if you're only using fine motor skills to do problem solving. That we have bodies, and we need to involve those bodies fully into the training of problem solving when the young people are both in childhood and adolescence.
Okay, so transition needs, that's sort of a second element. We're talking about family and the immediate environment. They also need training. Training and problem solving is part of it. What other elements are there that that a young kid needs to be transition to adulthood?
Well, one of the things is self-care. You know, I've been working with young adults since I started my first program in 1974, working with college kids that were a little lost and didn't know what they wanted and didn't want to waste a lot of money and time in college if they didn't know what they were going for. And so one of the aspects of that was I ended up with so many kids that didn't even know how to boil water or how to cook a healthy meal. And so self-care, like food that strengthens you and activities that work to recreate you, you know, recreation that really enhances you. Emotional intelligence is part of self-care. Thought management's a huge part of self-care, which I can talk a little bit more about in a moment. And the other one is nature connection, that if you read books like Richard Louv's research about nature and the importance of nature in being healthy humans, that's another one on self-care that's an important aspect of this.
Okay, and that's something that they need, is the self-care. and part of nature connection here in North Idaho. Of course, we have no trouble with that. We're right in the middle of raw nature when we walk outside the door. We got a couple questions here, sort of asking a question. So you feel that this change in relationships is a loss in values? You mentioned...
Say that again, Lon.
A change in relationships. So you feel that change in relationships is a loss in values? They're equating the change in relationships, and I think you were talking about some of the weaknesses of some of them. Yeah. It's a loss in values.
Would you say that? A loss of values.
Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
No.
I'm not... Okay, absolutely.
Yeah, if they can define that a little bit more, the change in relation, that, you know, as your brain develops, when you're a child, you're a concrete thinker. And then when you start moving into adolescence, there's some things that happen in your brain so that you start to be an abstract thinker. And quite honestly, in cultures that have lasted for a lot of generations, indigenous cultures especially, when they saw that the young person started asking those types of questions where they could begin to analyze or hypothesize abstracts, it's when they brought in a ceremony for the end of childhood. Mm-hmm. They wanted to disconnect the child from being cared for, totally being cared for, and moving into self-care and into understanding what their gifts were. And it was really important, especially in land-based cultures, that you utilize your gift. So the bow maker, you know, everybody knew how to make a bow, but it was the bow maker who had the gift for doing it, and they wanted you to know, matter of fact, they would call it your song, that each one of us is a song. And, of course, that's from a spiritual aspect, that the Creator has given you a song. And if you sing your song, you will be whole. And so when that abstract thinking started, then the mentors and the elders were going to help you to understand, you know, your song. So the roles changed. And parents moved into a different role than just caring for their child, and the elders or the mentors started helping someone to understand where their gifts lie.
Okay. Okay, well, we have to take a quick break for a minute.
Sure.
For an important announcement. And the next question, you might think about it a little bit. The person is saying, and I think this is a profound question in our society, it is a parent's job to guide and teach a child to be people that are good. Why would a parent let others teach their children? So let's talk about that when we come back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, talking with Randy Russell on Transition to Adulthood.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
Oh, hey, well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report back. We're talking with Randy Russell and on transitions to adulthood, and we had an interesting question that just came up, and why would a parent let others teach their children? And the first thing comes to mind is the old saying that's been around for a couple, three decades, it takes a village to raise a child. But it also, I think, if you could address this, I think the parents have a burden. People are assuming that parents are the exclusive ones to teach. In this in this country, parents are the exclusive ones to teach the children. It's the parents' responsibility. And if a child doesn't turn out good, it's the parents' fault. It's a tremendous burden on the parents. So why would a parent let others teach their children? You want to address that whole issue?
Sure, absolutely. You know, the first thing I'd say is that humans are naturally social creatures. And we do have a lot more, you know, families now that are just independent of themselves and they're not interacting with someone else. But the fact of the matter is, if you're sending your kid to kindergarten and older, you're already sending them to learn values from someone else that's living them that you may be totally at odds with their lifestyle or their beliefs about life and actions about life. But the big reason is because of the developmental phase where they're seeking to be themselves, where they're seeking their own identity. You want other people that, you know, have the same values and beliefs that you do. You've already set the foundation. But this transition where they're seeking themselves, if you're leading that as well, they don't get to the independent piece on this, and you're going to end up with a lot more struggle about identity than if you can find, even if it's one or two other human beings that are mature that are interacting with your child. They're going to hear them better than they're going to hear you, because there's this natural thing in most humans where they're tuning their parents out so they can tune themselves up, but they don't tune out wise, mature, other adults that are just reinforcing what you were teaching to begin or wanted to teach, ideally.
Okay, I think that's a good point that you mentioned a little earlier on that, is that if you send kids to school, you're already having others teach the children. Even homeschoolers, where the parents are doing the teaching, it's still a successful homeschooler has tours, they have visits, they go out and do various things and interchange. And some studies indicate that there's more socialization by a good, well-run homeschool. So the question is, why would a parent let others teach their children? They're already doing it, and it's necessary. The kid needs to have the social interaction with all the others, with other people, and learn how to do with it. So what other elements that needs to come in, have we pretty much covered it? And the basic question is, what role do parents, family, community, and peers play in this transition?
Well, there's another area that I focus on with Inner Pathworks, with working with young college kids that I do now. And that's to help them to know what are their unique gifts? What makes them unique? What makes them like everyone else? You know, what connects them to everyone else? What uniqueness do they have? How does their brain, their mind process things? What are their natural attractions? What are their natural gifts and talents? And what I kind of come to the conclusion of, because of some other statistics, is that a majority of young people, if they don't have this understanding of how they learn and what they love and what they, you know, where their passion and their vision would be, if you send them to college, they don't do well in a learning facility if they don't know why they're there.
It sounds like it goes back to the old questions the ancient philosophers talked about. The prime goal is to know thyself.
Right.
And you got to know yourself, and that's what you're talking about. They have to learn their passions, what they're interested in. You know, I run into some high school kids. I had experience in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, what are your goals? I don't know. One of them said, I want to work at McDonald's. Okay, well, that's not really a long-term goal. It might be a good interim goal. But there's a lot of that. There's a question here now that I'm sort of wondering about on the chat function. Society's really bad at this time, so why would you want others influencing your children? Now, my reaction is society isn't necessarily any worse now than it has been in the past.
Well, it's an interesting... I don't think I would go off of just Maine society. I would think and believe that someone who holds incredible values that they want to pass on and they don't want somebody else screwing them up would also be able to hopefully find some other people that hold the same values that they can utilize so that they're not just willy-nilly going out and finding somebody to do this. I think it's really important that you have a community of other human beings that hold the values that you hold so that you're not the only one that's demonstrating these values in a living manner.
Mm-hmm. So you're sort of controlling the environment, and I think the first thing that comes to mind is the parents that have strong religious values, so they send their children to a school that teaches those same values.
Exactly. And you know, and there's others as well. It's like there's a lot of people now that are concerned about environmental things, and so you know, they're going to have strong values about what they eat, you know, like staying away from GMOs or eating healthy or living in a healthy environment. And, you know, I've got friends that are very intent on teaching how to do sustainable skills, you know, like growing your own food and things like that. And they want their children to take these on as well. But finding people that are even better at it than you are is a really sharp way of training the child in the way you think is the wisest way for them to live in the long run.
So a parent has to pay a great deal of attention in who they use and choose as mentors and control that at least up to a certain extent on that. Well, you mentioned something earlier. Let's talk about the rites of passage and why would you use one? That was something in indigenous societies. That was an absolute. Both boys and girls had a rite of passage. As generally, when we hear about Moses, the boys going out in the hero's journey, but the girls also had their rite of passage in becoming physically a woman. That was very important. But talk about a rite of passage, and why would you use one, and what's the need for it? And you can start with maybe the deplorable state to where our country is at, to where the rite of passage is getting your driver's license or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because... you know, if you leave humans on their own, the peers try to come up with rites of passage. You know, the gang initiations, fraternity initiations, that I just really believe we have this innate knowledge, this innate desire to do a transition piece. And really, this is acknowledging the transition from being a child to being an adult. And we've pretty much lost it in our culture. There's only a few different groups that do a formal transition that reinforces the value of who you are and the value of living in a healthy way and acknowledging that you have moved to a different social service or social status. And, you know, we talked a little bit more about mentors and their role in this. The mentors played a huge role in designing and pulling off a rites of passage.
Yeah, a lot of programs that you've been involved in, I know, wilderness programs that they're really specifically doing that. I think the kids inherently need it. That's why hazing has been so popular over the years. And we hear about the bad results, but the kids seem to feel like we need this. Another thing is it seems to be inherent in humanity that we need some sort of celebration. Some ceremony to mark transitions. And we do that. Families do that. Various things. There's a big deal over a kid graduating from high school is pretty common, or in college. And any number of things. There's a celebration. Then there's a ceremony that the ad hoc put together. And a rite of passage is simply a major ceremony.
Exactly. You know, I can give an example of indigenous. Mainly because of the result of those ceremonies made for better social structure and social support, and it also gave the young person direction, and it was the way of teaching some of the cultural laws or cultural mores for a healthy culture.
And it's also a recognition. The kid gets a recognition for an accomplishment. That's an important part too. A public a recognition.
And the really strong part about that recognition, Lon, is that when your social role actually changes. My dad thought to do this with me when he did the rites of passage for me when I was 21, and at that point he asked me to take on some responsibilities, one of which would be to know where, if mom and dad ever, you know, were killed or anything like that, that I knew where all the papers were, that I was going to be taking some responsibility in that. But there was other responsibilities that I ended up with. So a rite of passage that doesn't change your role, it's a nice party, but it doesn't have as much impact or as much meaning is if your role changes. You know, if you look in the military, when your role changes, when you move from, you know, sergeant to lieutenant or private to sergeant or whatever, then your responsibilities change. And that's part of the rite of passage, is a recognition of the community of your work, and that you now are a fully functioning person in their society, that they will listen to your voice, that you have a voice now, and that you have a place in the society that they honor and that you can feel proud about.
Okay. There's a question here, and I think we need to correct something because audio is sometimes limiting. The question is, what are these rites, R-I-G-H-T-S, of passage you speak of? And we're talking about a rite, R-I-T-E, which is more like a ceremony or a recognition. It's not a rite like we have a rite to this or that or the other thing. It's a specific activity like, a lot of times... kids have seen going on a wilderness therapy program, or even something like Outward Bound. It's sort of a ceremony. It's an experience. It does all the things that you're talking about, but it's also a recognition of that. Okay, on the thing, we got rite of passage. You got the right spelling, and that maybe will clarify some of the question on that.
So here's a good way to look at that, Lon, is that if you can think back of Arthur and the knight and the round table and the knights and the ladies and all that, that there was a ceremony when a person became a knight, you know, like the queen or the king would knight them, and then they would send them on the journey that would give them the rest of the skills for that knighthood. So, you know, we talked about the hero's journey. The hero's journey is the journey that you can't take your parents on, where you prove to yourself that you're a capable adult who has honor and courage and integrity and the ability to succeed under adversity. And that struggle is a really important piece in this. But to have your whole family send you out on that and then welcome you back on it, those are rites. Those are rites of passage. They're ceremonies of start or completion of journeys that are going to make a difference in how you live your life.
And it brings something back to the community, too. You bring back your knowledge, your experience. That's an important part of it. So, and that sort of recognizes, the way I've read it, that recognizes you are now an adult. You're contributing to the community instead of being fed by the community.
Exactly.
And the community is very important.
With the Apache kids, you know, back in the 15th century, when you went through the rites of passage, you became the eyes and ears for the village, and they didn't. The rest of the village didn't see you for a year other than some of the elders and mentors, and you were there to scout out and find out where the food is, you know, whether that was for hunting or for gathering. You were to make sure that enemies didn't get close to your camp. So you became the type of a scout for that whole year. And if someone in the village had a need, like there was a widow and she didn't have a way to get food, she'd wake up in the morning and there would be a deer that had already been, you know, processed on her front stoop, because they were watching and caring for the village, and that was their training into becoming a full-fledged human being of that tribe.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but I have one more question, and then I want to give you a couple minutes to talk about how people can get a hold of you and what you're doing in your soulful passages. But what impact does the transition have on the parents? Say a kid goes on a rite of passage or whatever it is, and they come back an adult. What impact does that have on the parents, or what do the parents have to do to adjust to it?
All right, that's a great question. First off, it has an incredible impact on the parents. Some of the impact that it has on the parents is that their role is changing. And if they have only had a parent as their role up to this point, they're going to go through their own transition, kind of like a midlife crisis kind of a thing, of researching their identity.
Okay, but the empty nest would be part of it in our society?
So that empty nest is a definite part of it. There's a lot of people right now that have children where they should have an empty nest, and they don't, because their children have not either not moved into adulthood, or they have not found ways to be independent. You know, and so that that prolongs that time period where you stay in a parent role, because it's really hard to parent an adult in your home as a parent, if they're in a, you know, it's really easy to fall back into treating them like an adolescent or controlling or managing them. That's a difficult piece.
I think that's part of the problem with the failure to launch. The kids come back and all of a sudden they're still a kid and they say, hey, this is nice. It's like a cocoon. I'm safe.
Right. So here's the irony of this whole thing. Is that when your child moves through this transition, because whether you do a rites of passage on it or however you respond to it, it's still a transition from childhood to adulthood, from adolescence to adulthood.
But okay, well, we have about 2 minutes left before we have to knock it off. I want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing currently, how somebody can get a hold of you, or if they're interested in following up. So you have about 2 minutes.
Thanks, Trey. I work with young adults that are kind of stalled. They were in college or are thinking of college. It's kind of like a gap year. It's kind of a gap year program, but it also works for older. So I work with college age and older who are really looking for that life path that feeds them. And a lot of them have had some trouble with really being inspired by the education system, even though they're brilliant. They're highly creative, and a lot of them are real visionaries. They're going to make a difference. But they're kind of stalled on that. So I spend 1 to 2 semesters with them in helping them to understand what their natural attractions are, how their brain and upping their awareness and their ability to succeed. My program is called Inner Pathworks.
Don't forget to tell people how to get a hold of you.
Sure. The program is called Inner Pathworks. because your inner path works. You can get a hold of me at www.innerpathwork.com. My email address is randy@innerpathwork.com.
Innerpathworks.com, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, we've run out of time. It's been a very good discussion. I think we've just sort of scratched the surface, but this is Lon Woodbury at the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking about transitions to adulthood with Randy Russell. He's the founder of Inner Pathworks. He's been working with young adults for about 40 years, helping them transition to adulthood, and he just gave you the information how to get a hold of him if you have any further questions. But thank you very much, Randy. This has been great, and good luck, and maybe we'll have a chance to talk again.
You bet. Thanks, Lon.
Okay, Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Thank you very much. We'll be back next Tuesday at noon.